There's a story on today's front page that sounds like a minor administrative notice and is actually quite significant for a specific community. The .name top-level domain is being terminated. Neil Fraser posted the announcement at Neil Fraser Name, and the domain itself becoming the bearer of this news is grimly appropriate. .name launched in 2002 as a personal namespace, the idea was that people could register their first, last, name as a web address, giving individuals a persistent digital identity that felt cleaner than the alternatives. It never achieved mass adoption, but it built a loyal user base.
The HN thread has 468 comments, which is actually a large response relative to the domain's footprint, a sign of how many people are affected or simply sympathetic. The practical problem is that terminating a TLD is not like shutting down a website. These domain names are embedded in email addresses, SSL certificates, deep links, academic papers, professional profiles, and identity systems that have been built up over two decades. There's no clean redirect path. The digital infrastructure that people built on .name simply stops working.
From a policy standpoint, this raises questions about the governance of TLD lifecycles that the HN community is engaging with seriously. ICANN accredits registry operators, but the process for what happens when a registry decides to exit, or is forced to exit financially, is not nearly robust enough to protect the people who built infrastructure on those names. The argument that registrants accepted the risk when they chose a less common TLD is technically true, but operationally thin comfort when your professional identity has a broken link at its center.
On a related note, though the connection is more conceptual, the ID Pro article on authorization terminology got a modest but engaged response on 8chan, and I think it deserves more attention than its score suggests. The piece makes a careful argument that the industry's use of terms like authorization, permissions, entitlements, access control, and policies has become so inconsistent across different systems and organizations that engineers building distributed authorization systems are routinely talking past each other, creating security gaps in the process.
The example they give in the article is concrete and useful. Two teams at the same company building different microservices will use role to mean fundamentally different things. One team means a static permission set assigned at account creation. The other means a dynamic context-dependent capability evaluated at request time. When those services need to interoperate, the mismatch is invisible until something breaks in production.
This connects to a broader phenomenon in software engineering, where the accumulation of technically imprecise vocabulary creates systems debt that's harder to measure than code debt, but potentially more damaging. Code debt shows up in performance metrics and bug rates. Vocabulary debt shows up in security incidents and integration failures that get attributed to implementation errors when they're actually conceptual errors baked in from the beginning.
The C++ story about moving objects without STD move is a cleaner technical discussion, but it touches on a similar underlying theme, the gap between what a language's syntax implies and what the underlying semantics actually require. The author demonstrates specific contexts where move semantics kick in automatically without an explicit STD, move call, and the HN thread's 60 comments are a mix of appreciation from developers who weren't aware of these cases, and concern from developers who now realize their code may have been relying on them without understanding why.
C++ in 2026 is a language that accumulates these kinds of interactions faster than any individual developer can fully track. The committee adds features. Features interact with each other in non-obvious ways, and the resulting complexity is both the language's greatest strength, enormous expressive power, and its persistent liability. The move semantics discussion is a small example, but it's a representative one. The language does smart things for you, and understanding when it's doing smart things for you versus when you think it's doing smart things, but it's actually doing something subtly different is genuinely difficult.
Let me bring in the curriculum corner here, because the intersection of authorization terminology and the .name story actually provides a natural opening to talk about something we don't often cover directly, how antitrust law works, which is relevant background for the AI market dynamics we've been discussing all morning.
Go ahead, Marcus. This is useful context.
So antitrust law in the US is grounded primarily in the Sherman Antitrust Act of 1890. Yes, over 130 years old and still the foundational statute. Section 1 prohibits contracts or conspiracies that unreasonably restrain trade. Section 2 is the one that's more relevant to tech. It prohibits monopolization or attempts to monopolize any part of interstate commerce. The critical thing that most people misunderstand is that having a monopoly is not itself illegal under Sherman. What's illegal is acquiring or maintaining a monopoly through anti-competitive conduct, exclusionary practices that harm competition, not just practices that harm competitors.
That distinction is doing a lot of work, Marcus.
Enormous work. Courts define monopoly power as the ability to control prices or exclude competition in a defined market. And market definition is where antitrust lawyers earn their fees, because how you draw the market boundary determines whether a company looks dominant or whether it's competing in a crowded space. If you define the market as AI assistant APIs, OpenAI has a large share. If you define it as software tools used by developers, they are a rounding error. A company with 80% share of a narrowly defined market can still lose an antitrust case if the court decides the market was drawn too narrowly. That's why the cases take years. Market definition litigation alone can consume most of the proceedings.
And this matters right now because the AI industry is about to become the central antitrust battleground of the late 2020s, in the same way that search and social media were in the 2010s.
Exactly. The tools that Cerebras and K2 and dozens of open weight model providers are building are, among other things, competitive alternatives that reduce the risk of any single player achieving the kind of durable market position that would invite serious Section 2 scrutiny. Whether that's sufficient to forestall regulatory action depends on which jurisdiction you're operating in and who's defining the market.